We'll call the hour of 10:15 having arrived. We will call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum, but we will get started now. We have one bill before us. We're very fortunate to have Representative Dean R., House File 381. So when we have a quorum, I'll be moving House File 381 for Representative Dean R. So with that, I have three testifiers, Mike Gwynn, David Kelleher, Paul Cummings. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, so Representative Dean, do you want to present your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. But I know it's not a sophomore tradition, but this is my first time before taxes, so I thought I'd bring some cookie.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, this is good. Treats and snacks. I like those. Well, thank you. I think your bill has, we'll just leave it at that.
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill before us is, as it reads, Bill House File 381, and it's credit for historic structure and rehabilitation. For those of you who don't know, over the past few years, there's been a project in North Minneapolis that was put forward as a community development project by the community developer Emerge. And it's a historic building. It originally was a library built before the end of the last century, so in the late 1800s. Originally built as a library, one of the first libraries that actually had open stacks in the country. And what they did is they took this building, which had been laying vacant for several years, and redeveloped it as a technology and a job center for folks in the community in North Minneapolis. And through that process, they had applied for many different types of funding, as is often the case on these type of historic projects. And they had gone down a path where there was some federal money and some state money that they thought was going to be considered and brought forward, of course, along with city money and private funders and lots of other folks. And through the process, they actually originally were pursuing an EDA grant from the federal government. And early on in the process, they saw themselves running into problems with that particular funding source. And they actually came to me in 2013, and we began to look at the possibility of doing a capital investment request for this project. And through that process, we started down the road, and then all of a sudden the federal government said, well, yeah, we'll actually fund it.
Representative Dean, excuse me. I will officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order as we have a quorum. If a page could help pass the handouts out there. And the handouts are from Representative Dean?
Well, yeah, from me, from
your approval.
The merged folks, yes.
So we'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Earhart moves the minutes of January 29th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing or seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are passed. And for the members that just have arrived here, I will move House File 381. Representative Dean, do you have any amendments? I don't think so.
No, Mr. Chair, there are no amendments.
And Representative Dean, what my intention would be to, as I move this bill and be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. So we'll have a full hearing on it today. And so if you could please proceed. And again, has anybody come in that wishes to testify for this bill or with concerns? Okay, then members, as you see in your packet, we have listed Mr. Mike Gwynn, David Kelleher, and Paul Cummings. So please continue, Representative Dean. Sorry for the interruption there, but we have to make it all legal.
Not a problem, Mr. Chair. So in the process, we then heard that the federal government was going to fund its portion of the project. So we withdrew our request, bonding request. And what we've come to find through this process is the request at the state level, and correct me if I'm wrong, requires that for the historic tax credit, that the entity be a for-profit entity in requesting that grant money. And of course, at the federal level, the EDA money requires that it be a nonprofit status for the organization. So the project, in many ways, is caught sort of in this in-between zone where it's able to get some of the funding. Unfortunately, it wasn't able to 100% qualify in the end. My understanding is there were some provisions earlier that they had indications that they were proceeding down the right track to directly get the tax credits through the state historical society. So we the project has, you know, continued to move forward through the process and is nearing completion. It's had a few change orders along the way, as many buildings that are historic buildings do have when they find things. So we're coming for you today with a request that I think is at, do we have the dollar amount in here? We may not have it in here, but I believe the actual request is going to be in the presentation. And I believe that the 90% of the, which would be in a grant, is $880,000 roughly. And it's a great project. It's, you know, I mean, if you get a chance and you'll see some of the images, to actually drive over to North Minneapolis, it's truly a wonderful piece of architecture that I'm so grateful they were able to preserve in my district, and it provides services to many people that need it for employment and other types of things. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dean. We'll go, unless there's questions from members, we'll go into the testimony from Mr. Mike Wynn. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm the president and CEO of Emerge, and Emerge is an organization based in North Minneapolis that creates economic opportunities through job training and also revitalizing the built environment on our key corridors. For the past 7 years, we've been hard at work on an important redevelopment of the historic North Branch Library. It's located at Emerson and West Broadway. It's the state's oldest standing library building, built in 1893. And it's a renovation with very important historic and architectural significance. We've been working to renew it, an important project to renew and repurpose the building to create the Emerge Career and Technology Center. And we're developing a modern learning center that will enable us to expand job training partnerships, create employment opportunities, provide greater access to digital literacy, and continue to successfully work with people with high barriers to jobs in neighborhoods where we have some of the state's highest unemployment. It's a $6.5 million project, and it's very diversely funded. We've worked hard over time to raise these funds, and as Representative Dean has mentioned, it's just about finished, and the building is exactly the kind of project that the state historic tax credit was intended to help. In fact, the press conference for the first job impact report of the program was held at our building because of its great application. We're here because, unfortunately, as Representative Dean has outlined, that we have a bit of a dilemma. We're caught in a catch-22, Mr. Chair, in that we've not been able to reconcile the state and federal grant program requirements. And our state tax credit law requires projects to be eligible for the federal rehab tax credit, which means it's owned by a for-profit entity, taxpaying entity. The Federal Economic Development Administration, which we received $2.7 million grant, insists that its grantees must be nonprofits. And so, in spite of the substantial legal research and negotiation with EDA, proving that the proposed for-profit would not benefit for-profit entity. EDA refused to allow the creation of that type of structure to be owned by Emerge. So our request is to allow Emerge to receive a tax credit of $880,098, which would be equal to the amount we would have received had it fully qualified for the state historic rehabilitation tax credit. And without this support, without this credit, we'll be required to use program funds essentially to repay the loans that borrowed to cover this funding gap. And ultimately, it will impinge on our ability to deliver a good job training program. It will reduce the number of people we can serve over in the coming years and over a 20-year span. What we have planned at the center is very exciting. Over 75 construction jobs have already been created, and we expect to serve over 3,000 people annually at the center who seek work, training, and improvement on their computer skills. We're anticipating that about 350 people per year will engage in career training programs in manufacturing, medical technology, administrative support, IT, building maintenance career opportunities. And overall, this will help about 800 people every year get into the labor force. It's a very important project, as I stated, that in a neighborhood where we have unemployment up to four times higher than the state average. In fact, by recent measure, certain neighborhoods in North Minneapolis are over 25% in unemployment. One great example of a partnership that we wanted to highlight here is our partnership with Hennepin Technical College and their manufacturing assessment and advancement and assessment center that will be on site at the center and expects to train more than 100 people per year in a machinist certification. And through our recent experience with that, we're seeing career skills that are helping people land jobs between $15 and $30 per hour as a starting wage. And that's a very encouraging career pathway that we've been working on. We're asking that you help us leverage the many significant contributors who we have been able to stretch as far as we can. And we hope you can help us fix the tax credit so the center can get underway this year with the best chance to succeed into the future. And I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Wynn? Man, you've done good. Any questions? Okay, we'll go next then to David Keller. Thank you, Mr. Wynn, for that testimony.
Thank you.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society.
Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, the Minnesota Historical Society, along with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, are responsible for administering the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program that was passed by the legislature in 2010, and since that time has been very successful in leveraging investment into communities to preserve significant historic structures. I should say, first of all, that I would not disagree with what Representative Dean and Mr. Wynn said, that this is a really good historic preservation project, and it's a really good community development project. This is an important building for Minneapolis's history. What we would disagree with is the approach that this bill takes, and that is that it carves out an exception to the Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program, which was designed to parallel the federal tax credit for ease of administration, for predictability, and ensuring that those two programs worked parallel so that there are not two different sets of standards and confusion on the part of folks using that. So we would ask that if you are inclined to assist this project, that you find a different way than what is proposed in this bill, because it sets up a precedent that it's carving out a diversion from that parallel between the federal credit and the state credit. Without getting into a lot of the details of how these programs are structured, there are some cases where nonprofits are able to enter into agreements. It just didn't work out for this one with their arrangement with the federal grant that they got from the EDA, but there are some other cases where it's possible. But again, this is those instances, along with the other approximately 70 projects that have successfully used the historic tax credit, played by the same set of rules, and we don't want to start having carve-outs of someone having a state-only credit because that sets up a whole different program of reviews and standards.
Thank you, Mr. Kelleher. Mr. Kelleher, do we know of anybody or any other entities that's kind of caught in this? I think it was described as a catch-22. I think that's probably a pretty good description. Do we have, you know, as far as setting a precedent, do we have anyone else out there that if we pass this, that they're going to be lining up to get tax credits?
Mr. Chair, the way this bill is written, it's pretty narrowly drafted so that it would very likely apply to one project, but that's not to say that someone may come in the future that for various reasons might be turned down for the federal tax credit and then, you know, write up some language that says what their conditions were and therefore apply for the state-only credit. This is designed to be a parallel program with the federal credit. So to answer your question, I'm not aware of any other projects that are out there. We took a look at the projects that might fit the criteria that's written in this bill. I don't think there are any that fit the very, very specific criteria that's written into this bill. But again, that's not to say that someone might draft up another bill to carve out an exception.
Well, Mr. Kelleher, for the record, I'm very much against exceptions unless they benefit me. So I want to thank Representative Dean for bringing this bill forward. You got a situation that really I don't think anybody really anticipated, and you know, if we could help in some way. Now, Mr. Kelleher, you had mentioned maybe taking a different approach, that you're not big on the way the bill is written, maybe a different approach. Do you have any different approaches we could look at?
Mr. Chair, we've had some conversations with Representative Dean and Emerge, and there are some possibilities where the project could receive some resources from the state without using the state and federal tax credit system as a mechanism, but rather determine what the gap in funding is and you know, provide an appropriation or provide resources in some other channel, but not use the tax credit system and create an exception to that system as a way of getting resources to the project.
So as you say, you're not against the project by any means. It's just a matter of how it would be funded. So.
Correct. And we'd be happy to work with all the parties involved in the legislature and staff to figure out a way to accomplish that.
Okay, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think two questions, one for Mr. Kelleher and then one for Representative Dean. Mr. Kelleher, how many other historic preservation projects in the state other than the North Library one have been caught in this same catch-22, I think was the chair's phrase?
Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I'm not aware of any others that have started through the process that are caught in this type of a situation. There may be others who looked at their funding set up, their structure, and decided that the historic tax credit didn't work for them and therefore they never applied. So there could be others out there that would have fallen into a similar circumstance that they just never entered into the system, but we wouldn't be aware of those.
Chair Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, I apologize, I got hung up and came in a little bit late, but where in the history of the state historic preservation tax credit, where does this project fit in terms of kind of timeline? We're talking history, right? So you got to have a timeline. Was this early on in the program? Was this middle? Is this only a very recent attempt? Can you help me understand that or refresh my memory?
2011, I think. Representative Dean R. or Mr. Kelleher?
Well, actually, Dean R. Yeah. I think Mr. Kelleher can answer this.
Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, this was one of the earliest ones that came into the program after it was passed in 2010. So I think we've been working on this one for a while, and like I said, it's a great project. It's received accolades for its historic preservation merit, and it was part of this early on. But as they work to gather all the resources necessary to finish the project, including the federal resources, that's when they ran into collisions. And I think it's typical for a historic preservation project to have many, many funding sources, and the trick is to make sure that those various funding sources restrictions don't collide and get sorted out. And that's typical for a historic preservation project.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kelleher.
Mr. Kelleher, if we went ahead and put this in the omnibus tax bill and the governor signed it into law, does it put anything at risk with the feds and the state folks? Or would this kind of take care of their problem and we still have good relations with what we're doing with the feds?
Mr. Chair, I guess that would depend on how you structured a solution. I'm trying to think of a scenario where this would, you know, collide with any sort of federal restrictions.
Well, Mr. Kelleher, how about the DNR bill as is? If this passed,
yeah,
does it mess you guys up?
Mr. Chair, I don't think so, because they've been told that they wouldn't get a federal credit, and that's not going to happen. So that doesn't change by passing this bill. It's more of a state policy issue with this type of approach.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm curious to if Mr. Kelleher has more background on why the federal tax credit doesn't allow a nonprofit to take advantage of this, because, I mean, if you look at the total project costs, only 34% is from private funders. Two-thirds of it is public money. When you have these architectural treasures in really low-income communities that are struggling, whether they're in a small rural town that's on the decline, or in terms of population and economic vitality, or if it's in an inner-city neighborhood where the private investment for anything is really, really tough to come by, it seems like you have to have tons of public money invested in order to maintain it, because you just can't find a private entity that wants to put that much money at risk in a questionable market. And if the purpose of these programs is to preserve our architectural treasures and our legacy, you know, why would we not want to create a way in for a nonprofit entity to have access to, because otherwise you end up tearing them down? I mean, I was in this building, I don't know how many years ago, when they had it open on for a community thing, and it was in terrible shape. So I'm glad that it's got this kind of reinvigoration.
Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, I guess I would say two things with that. One is the way the Federal Historic Preservation Tax Credit is set up and has been for 35 or 40 years, it is to assist income-producing properties. That's one of the main criteria, income-producing properties. And developers who are doing these projects set up their financial structure in various ways. And in some cases, there are nonprofits that are involved as a managing partner, as part of that ownership structure. So there are some cases where nonprofits can get involved in these types of projects. Those structures get complicated pretty quickly and beyond my level of understanding. In this case, because of the federal money from the EDA, the restrictions involved with that grant did not allow that type of ownership structure, where a for-profit entity that would contribute to the income-producing nature of the project wasn't allowed with the EDA grant. So you have this collision. The other thing I would say is, you know, nonprofits do own a lot of historic structures, and there are some other ways that they can receive assistance. And in some cases, legacy funds have been used for nonprofits to preserve historic structures. And in fact, this project received a legacy grant one of the early ones to preserve their building. So there are many ways that these buildings get preserved in their various structures.
Thank you.
Chair Lauper. Okay, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that discussion leads into my question, actually, Mr. Kelleher, because I was looking at the presentation here, and that it was 232,000 received through a legacy grant. And listening to your request in the legacy committee yesterday for the upcoming biennium, I believe it was about 46 million. And I was just wondering, and you can clarify the number for me if my memory is off, and then just wondering if any of that is set aside for this particular project, and if not, why not, and could we maybe use some of that funding to help out in this situation?
Mr. Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, really good set of questions. So the legacy appropriation for history, and of course the words to preserve Minnesota's history, those words are in the Constitution in the legacy amendment. The way that appropriation is structured is that a large proportion of that appropriation is for grants for history programs and historic preservation projects. That's a competitive grant program. We typically have a lot more requests than we do dollars available. And, you know, projects can come in, whether it's a depot or a county historical society, and receive Representative Erickson's depot received a grant. Those are very successful. They gather community support for preserving historic structures. So, again, there are many ways that communities can receive assistance to preserve their historic structures. And I think the number was $41 million for the biennium for all the history programs.
Representative Will.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for clarifying the number. I appreciate that. And just to follow up, so then if there were to be a grant request put in for this project, would you take that into consideration for part of that funding?
Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chair, since this project, yes, we would. Since this project has already received a grant, I think we try to help out those who have not received a grant in the past. So they might be in the middle of the line. But I don't want to speak for the, we have a citizen review committee that does the reviews of those grant applications, and they would consider the pool of what they have before them. So I don't want to prejudge what they might decide.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Kelleher. And I respect that. I really appreciate that citizen involvement in that process. And I would just recommend that might be a better source of funding for this as opposed to the tax credit, as, you know, I agree with your concerns about creating an exception and setting a precedent in this method as the bill proposes. So just some food for thought there. So thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Kelleher? If not, we will go to, thank you, Mr. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And let's keep working on this regardless. I mean, we've got some time here. I think this is, I mean, when I look at the all-star list of authors, when you got Lily and Dabney on a bill, it's got a good shot. So let's keep the discussion going on this, because I think this is something we should be getting resolved here. It's a question of how do we do it. Mr. Cummings. What does Erdahl do?
Yes.
Man.
Legacy.
All-star cast for some DNR.
We try.
Got Erdahl. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Hi, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Happy to be here today. Yesterday, I spoke with Representative Dean, and today I come.
Welcome to the committee.
I didn't. The intention is not to talk about the importance of the project. It's to talk about the avenue in which this bill seeks to do it. As you know, I think, and I'm just going to be brief today because much of my testimony is sort of a retread on what Mr. Kelleher talked about. So this bill expands the historic tax rehabilitation credit for projects that don't normally meet the criteria, but in certain situations will be allowed the credit. This entity would be receiving the credit. It would be treated differently than other similarly situated taxpayers, and that's something that we're just trying to think through. is talked about from some of the committee members and Mr. Kelleher, typically nonprofit entities use other means to invest in historic projects, including the legacy funds. Part of, as Mr. Kelleher mentioned, nonprofits are not ineligible to receive the historic tax credit. But because of
to that point, Mr. Cummings, why would you give a nonprofit a tax credit when they have no tax liability?
Well, there are certain situations in which it applies. As Mr. Kelleher said, they were for income-producing property. They were income-producing. So there are situations, there are limited situations, in which the historic tax credit would be applicable. And those are within the guidelines of the historic tax credit, but it isn't for all nonprofits, but it's not excluding every nonprofit. But in this case,
okay, please continue,
Mr. Chair. And in many situations when nonprofits deal with this, there are ways in which they can partner with by creating a new LLC or with partnering with investors in order to receive this. But because of the agreement that was made with the EDA, that was there was sort of a choice that had to be made in the way in which it was put together. So as this bill moves through the process or this gets thought of, we look forward to working with the author and the chair in trying to find a way that would work the best possible way.
Okay, thank you. So the Historic Society and the Department of Revenue are against our bill. Representative Dean are?
Mr. Chair.
We got a good shot. We should be. Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify that the Department of Revenue was just giving context, that we weren't necessarily espousing a position.
Mr. Cummings, what's your position on the bill?
Well, we are next to the office. We're here as a resource, Mr. Chair.
I stand corrected. That was good. That was good. Okay. I stand corrected. They're not in opposition. They're here as resources. Representative Dabney.
I think he's seated firmly next to the author. I think that's his position on the bill.
He's good. He's very good. Okay. Questions? Mr. Cummings, I think we have a couple questions here. If you want to join us, sir. Representative Loon.
Just a quick question, and if I missed this in the earlier part of the presentation, I apologize, but who owns the building currently? Is it owned by Emerge, or is it owned by the city?
Representative Dean R.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loon. It is owned by Emerge.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And did Emerge purchase the city? I assume it was owned by the city at one point, since it was a library, or maybe it was part of, or by a government entity of some kind?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, the building was purchased from a private owner, and it was in private ownership for about 25 to 30 years prior to our acquiring the building.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so when you acquired the building, the EDA funds, were those funds used to purchase the building?
Mr. Nguyen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, EDA funds were not used, was not an allowable use for the acquisition, and actually private dollars were used for the acquisition because those were possible, and there was a need to secure the site and the ownership of the site.
Representative Loon?
Thank you. And those private dollars in that were used to secure the building, or is that same private entity involved in having donated for rehabilitation of the building as well?
Mr. Nguyen?
Representative Loon, the funds that have been gathered together, so from a variety of sources of foundation and individual funders, have all contributed to the acquisition and rehab all together. And there are various sources that we had to use for selected purposes for the building, but funders, private funders gave for the intent of the acquisition and rehab of the project.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Representative Knobloch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being in a few minutes late, and so maybe this question was already answered, but let me ask, what happened here that you are asking for this tax credit now? Did you think, Representative Dean, or did Emerge think that they were eligible for the tax credit and then realized that they weren't eligible for it, or was there a cost overrun in remodeling the building and so now some more money is needed? I guess how are we kind of to the point where we are today?
Representative Dean R. or Mr. Wynn? Representative Dean R.
You want to give it a shot?
Mr. Wynn?
Yeah. So we, through a long negotiation with the EDA, sought solutions to this problem as we discovered the catch-22 situation that we're in, where the state program required one structure and the federal funder would not allow it. On the other hand, so we were in this situation. We were hopeful that we could find a solution because it presented this gap that we needed to deal with, and we sought to find that solution here the last time, and otherwise we're left with this funding gap and a mortgage on the building.
Dean R.
And if I could add. Mr. Chair and Representative Knobloch, in 2013, I actually believe there was an allocation made of the tax credits, and then as we began to peel this back, we began to find out that there was that conflict that existed between the federal dollars, the type of ownership, and the state dollars. So really what we're trying to do is trying to come to a resolution of something that through the process, we found out that the project couldn't really meet at the time the requirements, what we actually had thought previously it did mean.
Representative Knobloch?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, so basically what you're saying is you thought you were eligible for the tax credit, and then you found out you weren't.
Representative Dean R.
Mr. Chair and Representative Knobloch, yes.
Thank you.
Chair Knobloch? Okay. Other questions for Mr. Cummings? And my comments, just to be clear for the record, the Historical Society has concerns about the setup, not necessarily against the project at all. And the Department of Revenue is, what did you say you were again?
We're here as a resource, Mr. Chair.
They're here as a resource. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Questions for Mr. Dean R., Mr. Cummings, Mr. Wynn, Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I hope all agencies will be at the table as resources. That's a delight to hear. Secondly, would this not, Mr. Wynn, set a precedent, or even Representative Dean R., if we were to enact something even similar to this?
Representative Dean R.?
You know, if you look at the bill, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, if you look at the bill, it's pretty specific, and the whole idea is to not set a precedence. I mean, our hope is that, you know, moving forward, other projects will actually be able to look at some of these issues that happen with this project, and maybe it's something that we as a legislature can also consider, is what happens when we have really great projects that get caught in this in-between zone or this catch-22, and maybe we can consider future legislation that might allow a project like this to move forward and not only receive specific federal money, but also some grant fund from the state as well.
Chair Erickson, other questions? Okay, seeing none, what we will do, members, is we will lay House File 381 over for possible inclusion. Members, we have, we're not meeting tomorrow, but on Thursday we'll meet and we'll hear Carlson, Bill House File 403, sales tax exemptions expanded to more nonprofit organizations. So we'll hear that bill, and again, we won't be taking a vote on it. So with that, members, for the good of the order, we are good government all the time. We are adjourned.